No, emotions are responders. Emotions are not designed to lead us. What is designed to lead us is our thinking capacity. And obviously, what you think is how you're going to perceive things in life, how you're going to speak, what you say, what you do, and all these other things. So, in regards to that which leads us, it should be doctrine, as we are here in regards to this local church to reprogram our mind with the mind of Jesus Christ, as the Bible is so called in the book of Corinthians. And in that way, that is what is to lead us. Emotions are fine in and of themselves, but they are not to be, they are not to rule us in regards to our lives. We are to overrule the emotions as necessary and let doctrine rule. But Eve and women are generally the more emotional of the two sexes. Eve tends to let her emotions get away with her. With her second birth of the younger brother Abel, which occurs fairly quickly after the first birth, probably some 9-10 months down the road there from Cain, she names him Hebel, which literally means breath or vapor, and is translated vanity in the book of Ecclesiastes. And so her bubble has been burst. She recognizes that the human viewpoint falsity of her perception of doctrine without having all the doctrinal facts and other doctrine to validate her conclusion in regards to the birth of Cain, that was unreal, and hence now she looks at the birth as being simply vanity. All the labor that she goes through, the pain, discomfort of the woman, to her now is vain, and that shows the emotional mood swings that you will see often with people, up one moment, completely down the other, because they let their emotions run their lives, rather than letting doctrine stabilize them in regards to their emotions. All right, so that sets the stage then for the continuation of the narrative and continuation of the text, as verse 2 then tells us, as it rapidly advances chronologically to when Cain and Abel become mature adults, and they now have their own professions. Cain is a farmer, and Abel is a keeper of the flocks, or a shepherd, in this regards. Now, in verses 3, and that sets the stage for the scenario that will occur between the two brothers here recorded in Genesis 4. So now in verses 3 through 5, here we titled these verses, Cain's Religious Attempt to Appease God. The term religion is understood in general in society as any approach in regards to worship of a god or gods or whatever. We make a distinction between true Christianity, the truth of Bible doctrine, and religiosity, whereas true Christianity is indeed the contents of Scripture, what God reveals to man in regards to having a relationship and worshiping Him, and religiosity being man's attempts to approach God based on man's terms and conditions. He puts in his own ideas, his own philosophies, and things of this nature. And we will see here in verses 3 through 5 the first attempt at religiosity, and is done by Cain himself to appease God. All right, looking here at the Hebrew in verse 3. So it came about in the course of time that Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. You have the wow consecutive followed with the verb cal, imperfect third masculine singular, hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. And it came to pass literally. Came about, as is translated. In the course of time is your preposition men, M-I-N, followed with the noun common masculine singular construct kets, Q-E-T-S. End of, outermost of, is the meaning of that noun, followed with our noun common masculine plural absolute for days, yom, Y-O-M. from the end of days, literally, translated in the course of time. That Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. You had the wow consecutive. Then you had the hifil verb, imperfect third masculine singular, bo, B-O. Hifil is causative in the Hebrew. So he caused to bring. With the wow consecutive, past tense, he brought. The subject of bringing, the one who brought, is the proper noun, Cain, transliterated, Cain, Q-A-Y-I-N. From the fruit of is a preposition men, with your noun, common masculine singular, construct peri, P-E-R-I-Y. From the fruit of the ground, you have the definite article with the noun, common feminine singular, absolute, or noun for ground, Adama, A-D-A-M-A-H, or Adama, however one may pronounce it. An offering, literally, for the Lord. You have noun, common feminine singular, absolute, Menicha, M-I-N-E-C-H-A-H. An offering, a gift, followed with your preposition lamed, and our noun Yahweh, Y-A-H-W-E-H, the Lord. In the New American Standard, usually they put the Lord in all caps when Yahweh is the Hebrew word. Verse 4, so Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground. Verse 4, and Abel on his part also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat portions. The wow conjunction, the proper noun, our name for Abel, Hebel, H-E-B-E-L. He brought, again, Bo is the verb, hifil, causative, perfect third masculine singular. I didn't transliterate it there. Also is your preposition gan, G-A-N, or gan. Himself, you have the pronoun, third masculine singular, on his part, as it's translated. And Abel brought, also himself, is the literal Hebrew, or on his part. Is who, H-U, again. When you're following the Hebrew and you're trying to transpose all this, sometimes I'll skip over something, but it's all covered. Don't worry about it. The firstlings of his flock, as it's translated, you had the preposition men from, followed with the noun, common masculine plural, construct bekora, B-E, K-O-R-A-H, the firstborns of, in the construct, translated firstlings. Plus a noun, common feminine singular, construct with the third masculine singular suffix, tison, T-S-O-N, his flock, obviously sheep, goats, would be the animals in view, and of or from their fat, wow conjunction, preposition men, and then the noun, common masculine plural, construct with the third feminine plural suffix, keleb, C-H-E-L-E-B, and of their fat. And the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering. Wow consecutive, we see God's response to their approach to him, wow consecutive. Then the verb cal, imperfect third masculine singular, our verb for regard, sha'ah, S-H-A-A-H. He had regard, looked at with interest or approval. He paid attention to, it got his attention definitely. It was acceptable, as the idea. in contrast to Cain, as we'll see in verse 5a, Yahweh being the one to whom it's all important whether or not they had the proper response. For Abel, his regard was for Abel. You have the preposition El, E-L, literally to or toward Abel. His regard was directed towards Abel, Hebel, and for his offering. Wow, conjunction, preposition El, repeated. Noun common, feminine singular, construct with the third masculine singular suffix. Again, our noun for offering, gift is Menecha, M-I-N-E-C-H-A-H. Verse 5, now we see the response of Cain back to or towards God or in general, and God's attitude towards Cain and his offering first. But for Cain and for his offering, he had no regard. While conjunction, preposition L, Cain, Cain, followed with the while conjunction, and for his offering, L, preposition, and then the noun, common, feminine, singular, construct, again, Menecha. He had no regard. Here you have the same verb for regard, preceded by the negative lo, L-O. He had no regard or interest, sha'a, S-H-A-A-H. So Cain reacts. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell. While consecutive, then our anger verb is a verb, cal, imperfect third masculine singular, kara, C-H-A-R-A-H. literally, he burned. The idea is anger kindled. Followed with the preposition lamed, for, Cain, Cain, the proper noun. Then you had the preposition meod, M-E-O-D, exceedingly, very much, became very angry. And his countenance fell, is wow consecutive. Then our verb, cal, imperfect third masculine plural, nafal, N-A-P-H-A-L. Literally, they fell. His faces in the Hebrew an idiom to note his countenance or his facial expressions. You had the noun common, both plural, construct with the third masculine singular suffix, or noun for faces, paneh, P-A-N-E-H, and his countenance fell. All right, rereading here these three verses, verses 3 through 5. So it came about in the course of time that Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. And Abel, on his part, also brought the firstlings, or the firstborns, of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering. But for Cain and for his offering, he had no regard. No divine interest is the idea. See. So Cain became exceedingly angry, and his faces fell, or his countenance fell. All right, the analysis here of verses 3 through 5. 1. Several unrecorded details are presumed here in verses 3 through 5. Now, you don't presume in regards to the scripture things are omitted unless it is clear. And certain aspects, obviously, going into the context here are very clear to us. And they are simply assumed with the Bible recognizing the reader is using common sense and logic and approach to it. So that is beginning A. Ritual sacrifices had been authorized by God as part of the family priesthood. That they are bringing sacrifices assumes that this is an established method and approach for men living in the age of the Gentiles, the time period from Adam and Eve up to Moses and the Exodus, the conquest generation, which the age of Israel then assumed its administration in that regards. And sacrifices began at the very onset in regards to human history. The sacrifices are implied all the way back in regards to Adam and Eve when they approached God with their fig leaf coverings, and he replaced it with animal skins, denoting that he obviously had to kill an animal or two. How many zebras did it take for that one? And to clothe them in that regard. So a sacrifice occurred. So B, this obviously sets precedent for the age of the Gentiles. We recognize that throughout God's economy, the course of human history, that God has determined to administer his plan in certain ways. The doctrine is the same. But how is to be administered and who is responsible and things of this nature, God's obviously free to change these things. And the age of the Gentiles, as I mentioned, from Adam and Eve up to, technically speaking, the conquest, the age of Israel, for it to be a national priesthood, they had to have property. They had to acquire land. You had the transition of Moses there. But anyway, the age of the Gentiles, that operated under what's called a familial priesthood, a family priesthood. The head of the house was one in charge in regards to the dissemination of Bible doctrine in that respect. And then you have the age of Israel, which began, as I noted, with the conquest generation. It was, and that is a national priesthood, national recognition and administration of priesthood, which priesthood is Levitical, Aaronic priesthood. That dispensation, administration, was interrupted in 33 AD. It is not yet complete. That administration still has 7 more years of history to be fulfilled. That 7 years of history is known as Jacob's trouble, the time of Jacob's trouble, the tribulational period. What it was parenthetically interrupted with because of Israel's rejection of the very Messiah and the reason why God removed their right of administration temporarily was with the age or of the church or the church age. That is the dispensation in which we live. And believers, churches that do not understand this. This is why you see so much confusion out there in the churches today with respect to the types of activities and the things they engage in and what they expect of believers. When you live in the age of Israel, you're under the Mosaic law. The law is what dictates how you are to operate, how you are to function, the type of Bible classes, how they're administered, and all these other things. Tithing was the age of Israel. These particular laws are not applicable to us in the church, only if they are repeated to whatever degree in the New Testament in regards directed towards the church. In the New Testament, we're never commanded to tithe. It is a free will or votive offering that we are to engage in, as we say, not grudgingly nor of necessity. See, they also had free will offering in the Old Testament. Tithing was a form of taxation for Israel, first and foremost to support the Levitical priesthood, because the priests, the tribe of Levi, were not given property. They were not given real estate as part of the inheritance of the land. All the other tribes were. That's because they were dispersed among all the tribes because of the responsibility in ministering, communicating God's plan through tabernacle, ritual, and all the other things that are applicable in regards to dietary code and all these other things that are applicable in regards to the age of Israel. See, then, and that was one tenth. They were supposed to give one tenth the giving now is how God prospers you or doesn't. And it's between you and God, see. So all these things you see in churches, trying to coerce people with a false doctrine in regards to you've got to give at least 10% or you're nothing before God. That's just ridiculous. That's just nothing but misinformation and abuse in regards to the church with respect to their parishioners, their congregation, the sheep in that regard. So that's just one example. See, we're not under the law. We're in the church age. And it is the royal imperatives that are outlined in the New Testament is how we are to operate. We do not set up a temple or a tabernacle. See, people may call their places of assembly a temple, but that just shows their ignorance in regards to the dispensation they live in. The church is also described in the New Testament in both a universal and local level. So you've got to understand that. Another great confusion in the world. See, Catholicism looks at the universal church as being a local church. They think they are the church, see. And if you're not a member of their church in a local sense, then you die and go to hell. Hence the threat of excommunication in regards to them. All this other ridiculous stuff that they engage in. Now, the Church Universal is made up of all believers from the day of Pentecost till the end of the church age, which that great event that signifies or is a mark of the end of the church age is the rapture, where Christ will return and remove the church, those alive and dead that passed on before us are still alive, and we will meet in the upper atmosphere and have the reward ceremony, the Bema Seat ceremony, in regards to our position in Christ and all that that means. So that is the Church Universal, all believers from the day of Pentecost till the rapture. The local church is the microcosm of believers where they live geographically coming together. As it says in Hebrews 10:25, assembling themselves together for the dissemination, the assimilation of Bible doctrine so that they can learn and know what God's plan is for their life, those who choose to want to know that, and grow up spiritually and make all the adjustments before God in that respect. So then after, as I stated, after the church age, you have the seven final years of the age of Israel, of which then the second advent will occur, where Christ does not come all the way back down to and set foot on this planet at the rapture. He will at the second advent. That's when he comes back. It is during the tribulational period, while the stage is now presently being set in the world economy for the tribulation, for the appearance of the Antichrist. Not until the rapture occurs does the Antichrist actually appear. And at that point in time, Satan will give his big push through the person of the Antichrist to establish his new world order. One world religion, he will claim to be the Messiah. See, but he's a false Messiah. And Israel, again, becomes the very focal point of the angelic conflict in that respect. And it will come down to the point, will look like they are definitely done in, as all the enemies rally towards the Antichrist in regards to his agenda to ultimately go in and seek to try to destroy Israel altogether. And it'll look like that's the last ride for Israel, but it's not. That's when Christ then will return as a warrior king. See, and he will come back and he will defeat all of his enemies. And the church will come back with him as, if you will, the terminology, his bride. And the book of Revelation and the Old Testament scriptures bring this to bear in this regards. That then sets the final dispensation, which the dispensations cover simply a period of 7,000 years. And we're almost got 6,000 under our belt now of human history. and the final millennial period, and that's when Christ will be on this planet physically, and he will rule personally on this planet. Then there's one little aspect of time after the millennial period. The millennium is exactly 1,000 years. Then there's a short amount of time during that time. Obviously, we're covering a lot of doctrine here. During that time, Satan is incarcerated. He's not free to influence the nations anymore during that millennial period. During that time, individuals will continue to exist on this planet. And the Bible makes it clear that even at the end of the millennium, with Jesus ruling personally on this planet, you'll have as many unbelievers as sands on the seashore. And Satan will be released at the end of 1,000 years. There will be one final rebellion. It's called the Battle of Gog and Magog. And once for all time, Satan will again be defeated, all unbelievers, and then that is the end of human history within this created reality of which we live today. And Christ will dissolve our present heavens and universe. We have the great white throne judgment, judgment of all unbelievers in time, their incarceration to the lake of fire, and then the new heavens and new earth. And our final eternal dispensation occurs. And no longer will we have any influence ever, again, of evil with respect to the course of God's economy for man. He will indeed fulfill his original plan for man that was upset due to the angelic revolt and then the consequences of man's failure in the garden at the restoration of our present heavens and earth. Go find that out in the Methodist Church. Yes, we're serious about the Bible. We want to know as much as God will allow us to know. We want to know it purely and accurately. So, to understand, you got to have some type of frame of reference for certain things, obviously, to make sense to you. And the age of the Gentiles, during the age of Gentiles, ritual sacrifice was part of the regular worship procedures established by God. So see, now the doctrine concerning the rituals was handed down from Adam, their father, to his sons under the family priesthood. And they were able to observe the proper application. Adam, obviously, by example, and through teaching himself, as he is revealed, revealed by God, and otherwise through direct divine revelation and other aspects, how God would communicate at that point in time with individuals. And he passed that knowledge down to his sons, Cain and Abel. And they were able to go to his Bible class with him and see how these things were to be performed, see what was expected. See what the protocol was and all the other aspects. What proper application was. And that application is determined by God and set forth by God, of which then Adam, the communicator, passed down to his sons. So Cain and Abel, at this point in time, another thing that's presumed, have become independent in age. They now have their own professions. Farmer and a sheep herder, and now evidence their own volition as to the doctrine taught. Volition is simply free will. Your volition resides in your soul. The soul is an invisible entity in regards to your makeup, but it's real. It's the thing that's most precious to us. You may look at life and see things in life and say, these have the most value. No, I'll tell you what's most valuable of anything. As an individual soul, God creates a soul in His image. Is created eternal. The soul never will never cease to exist. The question is how is it going to exist after the fact? And God did not create robots. He created the higher beings, humanity as well as angels, with free will. He wants us to make our own choices whether we want to have a relationship with Him or not. And obviously, children living at home under the authority of their parents are definitely under their authority. And the parent may say, you're going to a Bible class whether you want to or not. Well, after a while, obviously, they grow up and they're going to be on their own. They have to make their own choices. See, and Cain and Abel, they have become independent. They can exercise their own authority now, if you will, and evidenced in their own volition, as to the doctrine taught, and how we describe volition being manifest in that regard is either positive or negative volition. Positive volition is, just as it would sound, attracted to God. The Bible terms positive volition as seekers, see, those who seek God. And we would clarify that those who seek God and will desire a relationship with Him based on His terms and conditions. Negative volition are those that reject God, or they will at best enter into a system of religiosity, and they implement their own terms and conditions. See, but the importance is the important distinction between the two is positive volition truly is seeking God. Negative volition has no real interest, even though they may give a facade of great interest. So you got to understand, people don't have to be Christians to be religious. Religious trend is part of the norm of the human race. You can have the most backwards types of people, pagans as they are referred to, they're religious. Mysticism, they're demonic and occultic activities, but it's all religious, see. So, obviously, the issue is in regards to what system of belief one pursues and adheres to in that regards, whether or not it is correct or not. So Cain and Abel have come to independence and now evidence their own volition as to the doctrine taught by God and handed down to them through the family priesthood, or otherwise as it may have been done. As we know in the Garden of Eden, Yahweh, Elohim, held Bible class with Adam and Eve in the cool of every evening. They had Bible. You talk about cool. And you don't have to come and look at my ugly mug. You go and look at God's. And I'm saying He's ugly. You just don't want to make Him mad. And have Bible class in that vein. And of course, you know, you have all the human viewpoint. Oh, if God was just here personally teaching me, I'd believe Him. All right. It just shows your ignorance regards to people and volition. Just like we saw with Abraham, the rich man. Oh, if you just send Lazarus up, warn my brothers, they see somebody from the dead, they'll believe. Yeah, right. Yeah, they have Moses and the prophets. They got the truth of Bible doctrine just like the rest of us. See, it's just icing on the cake, kind of, to have a direct face-to-face interaction with God. So, E, now, learning and following then God's directive will in this matter equated to true worship. We recognize God's sovereignty, His will, as being expressed on different levels. His directive will is what He wants us to think, say, and do. We learn that by learning the Scriptures, by studying the Bible, see. But God also has permissive will. He permits evil to exist alongside good. God has overruling will. God ultimately overrules, will overrule all evil. He constantly is overruling evil. We know in this dispensation, as spite as evil as it's going to get before the rapture, that God the Holy Spirit continues to constrain evil so that this dispensation can come to its fulfillment. See, accordingly to God's plan. But He has overruling will. God has geographical will, where He wants us to be at any given point in time in our lives. Today in the church age, He wants you to be where the sound Bible doctrine is being taught so that you can complete the adjustments to God under the maturity and rebound adjustments. See? And maximize in regards to your own life in that respect. So God's directive will, how He wants us to do things, how He wants us to think, what He wants us to say. So F, this then sets the standard between true doctrinal worship, that which is our claim to fame, if we have one, that we know and understand God, and religiosity. Man's ideas interposed or superimposed over the very aspects of God. And while people may think, oh, some of these things that churches do are cute and they're cool, you know, build their gymnasiums, have all their athletic teams and everything, all it is a distraction in regards to the truth. And unfortunately, many of these things that they propose and they present take precedence over the truth. And a lot of it is put up as equal to the truth. And that's wrong, see. That's wrong. We strip ourselves in regards to the traditions of men, as Jesus refers to it as. So these particular things are presumed here as we go into this whole scenario. Doctrine has been taught. Cain and Abel are now going to evidence their volition with respect to that doctrine in the form of worship. And we recognize the difference between true worship and pseudo-worship, or religiosity, as we might state. So two, the phrase, so it came about in the course of time, is literally in the Hebrew, and it came to pass at the end of days. Wow, hayah min ketsyom. The vocabulary terms. And it came about to the pass at the end of days. Three, now the noun ketz, end, looks to the outermost of a set period of time. To the edge or outermost of a set period of time. Compare Genesis 8:6. Then it came about at the end, our term ketz, of 40 days. That Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made. So at the very parameter or outermost of the 40 or a period of time, 40 days there, Genesis 41:1. Now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he was standing by the Nile. Exodus 12:41. And it came about the end of 430 years to the very day that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. At Deuteronomy 9:11. And it came about at the end of 40 days and nights that the Lord gave me the 2 tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. And many other places. So the word study shows it looks at an outermost of a set period of time, a determined period of time. So for contextually here, it reflects 2 periods of time revolving around Cain and Abel's offerings. A, they have reached an age of independence, the outermost of their dependency of being under their father's authority, if you will. Ages. They have reached an age of independence, point 4a, to establish their own lives in priesthood. B, it denotes the time in the rituals is at the end of an agricultural or solar year. That's advanced and supported by the fact that Cain is bringing from his produce. So the sacrifice here is seen to be a per annum ritual. So 5, now Cain and Abel were very close in age, 9 to 10 months, as implied in the sequence of verses 1 and 2, and maybe a year, still fairly close. And both men find themselves qualified for their first ritual application, which if it happens per annum and their birthdays were just about right, they could still fall within the window and still, you know, basically be the same age. For a couple months, they're both, you know, would be 1 year old or 2 years old or whatever. So six, at that time, the appropriate sacrifices would have been brought to a designated place previously established for worship. They brought an offering. Well, that implies where? Brought it where? There was in a designated place previously established for this form of worship, ritual worship. Seven, the cow verb bow in the Hebrew means to go in, into, or enter. In the hifil, as in our verse, means brought. They caused to bring. Eight, it further suggests a geographical will for worship. There was a designated place, just like we have a designated place for believers who wish to come to learn Bible doctrine. Nine, brought, our term brought, is the usual term to ritualistic activity. Seen that way in Leviticus 2. As example, verses 2 and 8, in regards to the grain offerings as an offering to the Lord. Verse 2, the person shall then bring it to Aaron's sons, the priests, and shall take from it his handful of fine flour, so to bring the offerings to go to, and that would be particularly at the tabernacle later on at the temple. Then verse 8, when you bring or turn bow in the grain offering, which is made of these things to the Lord. So it's a typical term associated with ritual activity, which the rituals taught doctrine. Ritual did not save them or any aspect of that. It taught doctrine. So, 10, both men obviously brought offerings, Cain as well as Abel, as brought out in verse 4a. Abel also on his part brought an offering. So, 11, now offering, Manekah, means gift, and is a term in a secular sense in our civil world to win the favor of the great, to bring a gift to someone of importance to receive their approbation. See, example there, Genesis 32:14-19. Jacob regards Esau to try to get back on his good side in his own thinking. So he spent the night there. Then he selected from what he had with him a present, a gift for his brother Esau. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, 10 male donkeys. That's quite a list. And to gain his favor so that hopefully Esau will not try to impede him or otherwise attack him. As you know, Jacob received the rights of primogeniture as he tricked his father into thinking he was Esau. But as illegitimate as it was, it's acceptable before God. Which we're not here to try to explain all that at this point in time, but we do understand it. Esau was an unbeliever and negative. Then he commanded, verse 19, also the second and the third, and all those who followed it, go saying, in that manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him. 2:14-19. Oh, verse 20, I will appease him with the present that goes before me. It should be verse 20. Sorry. Then afterwards I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. And then 43:11, Genesis.
Then their father Israel, Jacob, said to them, "If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best products of land in your bags. Carry down to the man as a present," see, as a gift.
A little balm, a little honey, aromatic gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Sounds good to me. So the term is used in a secular sense to seek the approbation, favor, acceptance of another. Just examples. So 12. Now in the sacrificial code of the law, as recorded in the Leviticus, the term is usually associated with a grain offering rather than an animal sacrifice. In fact, in the book of Leviticus, the term offering is associated in that regards some 20 times. And I just gave you an example there. Again, the Leviticus 2, chapter 1 and 3 through 14 reflects that. And we'll look at those verses after we take our break.